today on AgNews Daily.
I don't think this is an overly bullish feeling from a weather perspective right now. I think the fact that, you know, we are able to get field work done, we are looking at the potential for planting early. I think these are bearish thoughts that I think the market's going to have to digest that first.
Well, here we are, listeners. Fourth day of March, 2024. We're talking about a Market Monday edition of the AgNews Daily podcast. Welcome back to Iowa, Delaney.
Welcome back. And it was rainy and kind of cold today, so not my favorite welcome back to the state.
Yeah, what a goofy February / March that we've got here. The thunderstorms and hail were potentially going to be an issue for Iowans today. Strong thunderstorms were forecasted for central Iowa into this evening. Hail and wind are the biggest threats that could come with these storms. Some of the storms will have the capability of producing pea to dime-sized hail, so we'll see if any of that matures for us. A winter weather advisory is still being issued for counties in northern North Dakota. I saw a map of the roads department for North Dakota. It looks like almost the entire northern half is travel unadvised. Snow and strong winds are expected to gust up to 40 miles per hour in that area, which could make those driving conditions very hazardous. Areas of blowing snow could reduce visibility. We also have reduced visibility coming from the wildfires in the Texas and Oklahoma panhandles as well. That will continue to monitor, but those are your weather updates today.
Well, and of course, we're still watching to see the Texas wildfires unfold in the aftermath. They're working to secure an interview with hopefully a Texas rancher or someone that's working with the Texas Cattle Raisers Association, Tanner, but more on that to come later this week.
Yeah, it looks like we still have now more than 6 days into the Smokehouse Creek fire in the Texas Panhandle. In western Oklahoma, only 15% of this fire was contained as of last night, according to the Texas A&M Forest Service. Now officially, like we said last week, is the largest wildfire in Texas history. Over 1.1 million acres, nearly 500 structures have been burned, and thousands of livestock animals have unfortunately perished. Two people have been confirmed dead as a result, an 83-year-old grandmother and a woman in her 40s, as of this report that came out yesterday, Delaney.
I had not seen that latest update, so thanks for bringing that to our listeners' attention. Tanner, we saw a couple of not quite record-breaking land sales, but Iowa farmland brought over $26,000 per acre on a few transactions just at the end of the year. Five farmland transactions that transpired in December of 2023 had prices ranging from $15,300 to $26,200 per acre. Of course, those were blown out of the water after the $29,000 per acre sale that happened just a few weeks ago, and maybe more to come. I don't really feel like that was the talk of the town at the Commodity Classic. Tanner, I'm curious if you had folks talking about farmland prices in your conversations.
No, it seemed like a lot more people were focused on the carbon market and what Vilsack was planning to announce when he showed up at the sale, but yet did not produce any type of announcement. A lot of disappointment around those conversations, as well as where ethanol was going to fit as far as its year-round E15 use. And then, of course, the dry conditions that we are experiencing, whether that makes an early plant or that creates an issue as far as subsoil moisture. So it seemed like those were a majority of the topics I heard.
Yeah, and we were supposed to get pretty good direction from Secretary Vilsack about the new GREET model or updated GREET model for the ethanol industry. But as of Friday, Secretary Vilsack said the Biden administration won't release their updated greenhouse gases, regulated emissions, and energy use and technologies, otherwise known as the GREET model, for a few more weeks, which was pretty disappointing to folks in attendance.
Yeah, absolutely. It was certainly probably one of the largest letdowns of an otherwise really good show.
Yes, I think that's a good way to summarize it.
Well, we know that as a lot of things are under a microscope, show is the sure also is that of water availability. It's fundamental, obviously, to human life, but also to crop production. And farmers have been widely varying with degrees of understanding of the water systems and their rights. Helena has offered a new product called Resgenix that can offer row crop growers an ability to understand their availability. The product can help farmers manage their water that is available to their crops and optimize its use. Whether you are looking at dry land acres or you're looking to maximize rainfall that you get throughout your year, you are opportunity to provide this product. Resgenix works by coating soil particles. The process can help improve aggregation in all soils types, strengthening the water holding capacity and mitigating the erosion or runoff as soil takes on moisture. It also has a controlling factor for evaporation loss. This is one of the technologies unveiled at Commodity last week on sandy ground where the gaps between soil particles are rather big. This product reduces the space between particles. In clay-based soils, it helps create more space between the soil particles. So quite an interesting product there, Delaney, that can be used either in dry land crops or those using irrigation. It is commonly set up to where farmers can either use 20% less water or gain 20% more capacity in their water holding ability. And I know when we talk a lot with growers, that's a pretty big deal.
It certainly is. And I think those types of conversations are just the type of thing you want to have at Commodity Classic when we're talking about the latest and greatest in ag.
That's correct, especially with one of the nature's most valuable resources.
That's right. Well, in some other ethanol-related news here, Summit Carbon Solutions has added more ethanol plants to their planned carbon pipeline, announcing on Monday today that Valero has agreed to connect 8 of their 12 corn ethanol plants to the project. Those plants are included in Albion, Nebraska, Aurora, South Dakota, one plant in Welcome, Minnesota, and 5 plants in Iowa, including Hartley, Albert City, Fort Dodge, Lakota, and Charles City. The 8 facilities now adds 1.1 billion gallons of ethanol each year and will lead to the additional capture of 3.1 million metric tons of CO2 annually, according to Summit's press release on Monday. They're excited about this partnership, and with the inclusion of Valero, Summit's project now extends to 57 different ethanol plants across the upper Midwest, which should sequester over 16 million metric tons of CO2 per year, assuming this goes off as planned, Tanner.
Yeah, it looks like that's one of the things that Iowa lawmakers are continuing to focus on. We did see them come back from their recess this week. They now have a couple of things in their crosshairs to continue to push forward. Iowa delegates had rejoiced the passage of year-round E15, yet they wanted the measure to take place this year rather than the 2025 inaction date. As they continue to push forward, Iowa lawmakers are looking to create an effective date in April of 2024 rather than April of 2025. This would be a rule change over that of what the EPA has provided them for guidance already. They are also continuing to applaud Governor Reynolds as they are looking at her persistence in advocacy for getting this switched over. A lot of the conversations will be in the forefront. There are 8 spending bills that the legislatures in Iowa are coming back to vote on. Expect 2 of them to be voted on this week and the other 6 to be voted on the following week. After years of advocacy, the representatives here within the state will continue to work towards securing Social Security solvency. So there's a mouthful for you. They continue to look at a long-term answer for what would work. Representative Feenstra included in his introduction of a bill that would require the Congressional Budget Office to include a projection to provide a 10-year outlook. So that is one of the changes there. We also see Iowa legislatures looking to give farm bill updates to those in the White House now that we're almost into March. They haven't seen any movement, as we've reported on the podcast before. They're looking to continue to push forward. And of course, one of the last ones is continuing to provide clarity and consistency when it comes to competition in the meat packing market. So a lot of ag-related items on the agenda over the next couple of weeks for Iowa legislators.
Well, we're also going to see here potentially extended delays on the right to repair case. Court proceedings in an antitrust lawsuit filed against John Deere by a group of farmers could be delayed by at least another 6 months on both sides. They said they're continuing to negotiate the release of information in this national right to repair case, but attorneys for a group of more than 17 farmers who sued John Deere in the U.S. District Court for the District of Northern Illinois have asked John Deere for structured data available on John Deere's EQIP system. The system stores information about individual equipment owners, including their histories and work completed, as well as other information. And last week, those farmers asked the court to modify the deadline as they wait for John Deere to provide that requested data. The next steps here are to wait for that data, Tanner, but they said it might be a little bit of a delay here before they're able to move forward with their next steps on the lawsuit here. But Deere has proposed a four-month extension and said it's unworkable for them to get plaintiffs and their experts ready in addition to all of this data sifting that has been requested by the group of farmers. And, you know, that's not something we talked a lot about at Commodity Classic last week. So it was a little bit off my radar, if I'm being honest.
I would agree. Last headlines I've got today are in regards to the Israel and Hamas war. We haven't touched base with their headlines lately. Egyptian, Qatari, and U.S. mediators are meeting in Cairo to untangle a deadlocked ceasefire talk between Israel and Hamas. Israelis say that they would not send delegation to this conversation after the Hamas has not responded to its term for prior negotiations. The Israeli War Cabinet Minister said that they will be in Washington, D.C. this week for meetings with Vice President Kamala Harris and Secretary of State Antony Blinken. This comes after the U.S. made its first humanitarian airdrop into Gaza on Saturday. Aid groups were criticized for the effort as being ineffective, while U.S. and Israeli delegations continue to talk about the bulk of the aid deliveries. The U.N. says many of those injured in the carnage at the Gaza aid convoy last week were just suffering gunshot wounds. Very few stated that these wounds had been severe. Eyewitnesses stated that the Israeli troops that fired into the crowd of civilians stated this was in a panic. So quite interesting there. I know a lot of those videos are circling social media and news stations right now of those humanitarian aid drop parachutes and crates. Majority landed in the water, Delaney, but some of them did hit their target. So a couple of updates there, but that's what I've got for headlines today.
Fantastic. Well, I do not have any more headlines left here today, aside from taking a look at where the markets have closed for today. Later this week, we've got a WASDE report coming up, as well as a couple of other big factors we're watching. And Ted Seifert will dig into those a little bit more with us here in our Market Monday segment. But on this Monday afternoon, May corn added 5 1/4 cents to close at 4:30, while May soybeans added 3 3/4 cents to close on the board at 11:55. Taking a look at the wheat complex today, Chicago May wheat added 6 1/4 cents to close at 5.64. May hard red winter wheat added 15 3/4 cents to close at 5.80. And May spring wheat added 15 3/4 cents to close at 6.59 1/2. Livestock today did not have such a nice day, as April live cattle shed $1.77 to close at $1.8667. April feeder cattle shed $2.25 today to settle at $2.5575. And April lean hogs down $1.80 on the board to close out the day at $86.27 1/2. Tanner, we're kicking things over to a Market Monday conversation with Ted Seifert here next. Well, folks, coming off of Commodity Classic last week, we are excited to be joined today by Ted Seifert at the Ted Spread on Twitter to talk all things markets. Ted, did you have a great Commodity Classic?
I really did, Delaney. It was fantastic. I hope you had a really good one as well.
I did. It just felt like it went by so quickly. And here we are Monday, and it's like, oh, we got to figure out what we're doing today again.
Yeah, no, I hear that. It was good to see you, by the way. Markets, you know, when we come back. And so, first of all, not everybody was at Commodity Classic, right? I mean, for some of us, it's just a normal Monday. But I think this is, you got a lot of people that you talk to, you know, at Commodity Classic or otherwise, that are really, really looking for this bigger balance in these markets. And then you come back you know, on a Sunday night and a Monday, and you've walked into some strength, you know, and it's good to see. But, you know, especially in the case of soybeans, by the end of the day, that strength had kind of faded a bit. It makes you wonder, you know, really, is this a scenario or the right time frame to see an extended amount of strength in these markets? Or are we just dealing with a, you know, sort of a dead cat bounce here, or just a corrective bounce in an otherwise bearish market? And I don't know, you know, at the end of the day on Monday, I think there was no big victory for either side, right? It just kind of leaves you wondering, how does the rest of this week play out? Are we going to see a big turnaround Tuesday and take back a lot of the gains, especially in corn? Or are we able to extend on this and continue to put some pressure on the fund positions, continue to, you know, maybe shake some of that out? And really for them, it's profit taking. It's not like they're on the wrong side of this. They've been on the right side for a long time. But do they say, okay, enough is enough for now. Let's move to the sidelines. You know, let's take our profits and then reassess and, you know, come back in later one way or the other. Right. So, yeah, I think we're all trying to figure out what it's going to look like by the end of the week.
So what are some things that we should be watching for as this week progresses to be able to tell us the difference between a turnaround or one of those dead cat bounces?
Well, so the first one there, we got a lot going on this week, you know, so that's a great question. But the first one was export inspections. We saw that. And, you know, it was another, I'm going to say, mediocre week for corn. Not great, not the worst, but it was a really pretty good week for soybeans. And that kind of is following up on what has been a string of some really rather good export inspection weeks for soybeans. The problem, though, is that our sales have really been rather poor, right? And so, you know, export inspections can only stay so good for so long, because if you don't have the sale, you can't keep shipping them if the sales aren't there. So we need to be watching to see if those sales really start to pick up. They might, you know, there are some concerns. There have been concerns about the Brazilian soybean crop for a long time, and yet we've all been wondering why China hasn't come in as a bigger buyer. Well, maybe that starts to happen. And then, you know, you have a little bit of a concern growing for that second season corn crop in Brazil, a little bit of a concern, weather concern growing for Argentina. So that might not only be a trigger for some fund short covering, but it might be a trigger for some bigger export sales, which we really need to see in soybeans. And then finally, at the end of the week, we've got our WASDE report. So what does the USDA have to say about all this? What is the USDA going to say about South America? And how does that affect the global balance sheet? And how does it affect our exports, right? I mean, personally, if I'm the USDA, I think I have a hard time with U.S. export estimates for soybeans, because on one hand, you've got these, you know, 2 weeks ago was the marketing year low, and last week was only just a little bit better than that. But at the same time, if I'm having to lower Brazil's production number, I would be somewhat compelled to want to, you know, be optimistic on U.S. exports. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how they feel about that and what they show us on that balance sheet on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, February isn't typically a big market mover, right, Ted? So, I mean, are you expecting to see anything crazy happen?
You know, the big news, the big ones is usually January. February is not a whole lot. March also isn't that big of a deal. Really, the biggest thing that we're looking at is if there's any, you know, major changes in South America, which again, you know, there's a lot of people out there that think the USDA have to come down very dramatically on that Brazilian soybean number in particular. And then if there's any tweaks on the demand side of the equation, we're not to the time frame yet where we're looking into new crop. You know, and there's really nothing changing on the production side of things for our domestic balance sheet. So, no, some years this is a real non-event because there aren't any big question marks about South America. I'd say this year there's it's a medium report. And I mean, yes, there can be some bigger changes on South American production. So it does make this report interesting. And I do think that it will have implication or effect on how we trade. But no, this is not one of the biggest reports of the year.
So as you were able to have many conversations at Commodity Classic and obviously through the rest of your dealings, What has, in your opinion, this mild winter done for the potential of yield prospects for 2024? Are we looking at some strong figures because we get some timely enter into the field?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think there was a lot of conversation about that in Houston. On one hand, I think the first thing we all think about when we have such a mild winter, and by the way, I was telling you guys or telling Delaney this down in Houston earlier last week, we had our first recorded tornado in Cook County, Illinois, in the month of February since we started, recording these things. That's how mild of a winter this has been. I mean, we're hitting 70 degree days in the end of February and the beginning of March. It's pretty wild. But again, the first thing that we think about when we think about that is, oh wow, 2012. That's how this started in 2012, and then we all know how that ended up throughout the growing season. But what I'm also going to say is that, how did the markets start in 2012? We got off to a very fast pace of planting. Fast pace of planting generally means that we have a pretty good yield potential. It also means that we might end up planting more corn than what we were originally expecting. It also means we've got a lot of time to do field work right now. I think as much as maybe we want to look at it as a potential for weather issues and a difficult growing season, and the potential for higher prices, I think we have to look at it as a potential for lower prices, at least at first. And that could turn into higher prices, but I don't think this is an overly bullish feeling from a weather perspective right now. I think the fact that, we are able to get field work done, we are looking at the potential for planting early. I think these are bearish thoughts that I think the market's going to have to digest that first.
Ted, I know you mentioned WASDE report this week. We mentioned export sales already. Let's talk livestock here, because I think we have a pretty good handle on maybe what's ahead here for the grain markets. Livestock today didn't have a very pretty day coming off of some losses in both live and feeder cattle. What is pushing markets lower here today?
Yeah, we've seen kind of a lot of volatility in the cattle complex. And that was starting, well, last week or even into the week before. And so this is sort of an area of consolidation that we're having. And it's really the first one that we've had since we put our lows in on the 6th of December. Really since then, aside from a couple weeks of or really, 10 days of some slower holiday trade, this has been a very orderly move higher. And so now, as we've gotten overbought and kind of running into some overhead resistance, you have this level of consolidation, and I think you have this potential for what could be a bigger correction in a bull run, right? We didn't really, well, we had the two down days Thursday or Wednesday and Thursday of last week, but Friday was a pretty strong up day, and then followed up by today, we took about half the gains or a little more than half the gains back. So again, that sort of volatility could be saying that we're getting ready for that correction. Fundamentally, I still think we've got room for higher prices, or at least we're justified at being where we're at. But markets are markets. They're going to trade. They're gonna do things from a technical standpoint that make them more healthy. And again, I mean, just based on what we're seeing and kind of the sort of the wishy-washy up one day down the next sort of trade that we're seeing, to me suggests that we could be due for a bit more of a correction in the near term.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot for our listeners to pay attention to here over the near future. But if they want to pick your brain or get some questions answered directly from you, what's the best way that they reach out and connect?
Absolutely. You can reach me directly at 312-277-0113. That goes directly to my phone wherever I'm at. And aside from that, you can find us on the web at www.zaner, ZANER.com. And then finally, if you're on Twitter or X or X Twitter or whatever we're calling it nowadays, I am at the Ted Spread.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for hanging out with us.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's always fun to catch up with Ted in person, but also to get his insights here on the podcast. We appreciate him taking that time. Listeners, we appreciate you hanging out with us. Remember, a couple of exciting things coming up over the next couple of weeks here on Ag News Daily, so you won't want to go too far. Make sure you tune in every day to make sure you don't miss anything, right, Nalini?
That's right. I just was thinking, when should we start releasing a little bit more of our news, Tanner? So we'll have to work on that.
Absolutely. But for today, what do you say? Should we let him go?
Let's let him go.